Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome, curious minds. Today we're embarking on, well, a truly epic deep dive. We're looking at a work many consider one of the most challenging, yet also profoundly rewarding philosophical texts ever written. It's a book that asks the biggest questions, really, like, how do we know anything at all? How does our consciousness actually develop? Mm-hmm. We're talking about Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit. Now, we've gathered a stack of your sources, these comprehensive summaries that distill this, frankly, monumental work. And our mission here is to kind of extract the most important nuggets of knowledge for you. We want to make sense of this profound journey of the human mind and uncover why it still matters, why it's still so relevant today.
Indeed. And it really does matter. This isn't just some dusty historical text. You can almost call it Map of Consciousness itself. It offers a pretty radical perspective on how we develop understanding, you know, both as individuals and collectively as societies.
Yeah.
Basically by confronting and working through contradictions.
Right, not by avoiding them.
Exactly. It's almost like a blueprint for growth.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Before we dive straight into the book itself, who is the mind behind this philosophical giant? Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, born 1770, died 1831. I mean, he lived through an absolutely tumultuous period, didn't he?
Oh, completely. Born during the Enlightenment, deeply influenced by Kant, of course.
Yeah.
But he also lived through the French Revolution, and he even famously witnessed Napoleon entering Germany.
Ah, yes. The world soul on horseback line.
That's the one. So you have this figure absorbing these massive historical shifts.
Given that kind of dramatic backdrop, how did Hegel manage to see the world so differently maybe than his contemporaries? What was he trying to get at that others weren't?
That's a really crucial question. Hmm. I think what's so striking about Hegel is he wasn't content to just explore one little corner of human experience like many philosophers before him. He had this, well, this extraordinary ambition, really, to synthesize all forms of human consciousness, everything from our simplest sensations like seeing red right up to our most complex philosophical thoughts. He wanted to fit it all into one coherent, systematic framework.
Wow. All of it.
All of it. And his deep background in both classical philosophy and, importantly, theology sort of uniquely positioned him. It allowed him to try and bridge the finite and the infinite, you know, the individual person and the universal spirit in entirely new ways.
So he was essentially trying to write a kind of spiritual autobiography of humanity itself, charting the whole journey.
That's a great way to put it. He wanted to trace the evolution of consciousness through history as this grand unfolding story.
And central to that story are these contradictions.
Precisely. For Hegel, contradictions weren't just mistakes or errors to be, you know, stamped out. They were the very engine of intellectual and spiritual development,
yeah.
Necessary stages.
Okay, so at its core then, what is Phenomenology of Spirit really about? If you had to boil it down, what's the central argument holding this massive work together?
Well, the main idea is truly revolutionary for its time, and maybe it still is. It's that human consciousness and knowledge develop through a necessary dialectical process.
Dialectical. Okay, meaning?
Meaning a process of self-discovery driven by resolving contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about finding some static, unchanging truth out there. It's about truth unfolding dynamically through struggle. So if you find yourself stuck in a certain viewpoint, maybe a really rigid one, Hegel says you don't grow by just digging your heels in harder.
Right.
No, it's by truly wrestling with its opposite, by engaging with the antithesis, that you unlock new possibilities. You reach a higher understanding, a synthesis that you couldn't have even imagined before. That's how knowledge actually grows.
He famously calls the book a ladder, doesn't he? That consciousness has to climb rung by rung.
Exactly. It's not about someone just telling you the truth from the top. It's about experiencing each step yourself, each limitation, each time an old way of thinking breaks down. That's necessary to reach a higher form of understanding.
You have to live the journey. You can't just read the travel guide.
Perfectly put.
Okay, so this journey, it's not a straight line. It's a series of experiences, often challenging ones. Let's look at a few of the most impactful stages consciousness goes through. Maybe we start where Hegel starts, with what he calls simply consciousness, or this illusion of immediate knowledge. First up, sense certainty.
Mm-hmm.
This is that naive belief, right? That just pointing and saying this here now gives us the most certain, the most direct, the richest knowledge possible. Like, I look at this mug here now. Seems pretty solid.
It seems utterly solid, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually startling when you follow Hegel's analysis.
Mm-hmm.
He shows how even what feels like our most direct sensory experience is already mediated by concepts. It's not pure at all. The moment you try to articulate this here now, it's already gone. It becomes a universal concept, not that pure, unique, particular thing you thought you had.
How so?
Well, think about it. The moment you say this mug, you're using a general concept mug that applies to potentially millions of mugs, right? Hmm. Not just this specific unique one right here in front of you.
Oh, okay.
That immediate unique this-ness just vanishes as soon as you try to grasp it with language or thought. It turns out to be surprisingly empty of specific content, paradoxically.
Wow. Okay, so our first attempts to just grab hold of reality are, well, more fleeting and abstract than we think. Then consciousness tries something else. It tries perceiving objects with multiple properties. Like saying, okay, not just this, but this salt is white and it's cubical and it's crystalline. We move from just this to this thing with these qualities.
Exactly. A step up in complexity. But then it gets tangled up again. It struggles trying to reconcile the one object, the salt, with its many properties, white, cubical, etc. Is the object somehow separate from its qualities? Where do the qualities live? How do they stick together in one thing? Consciousness ties itself in knots over this.
Okay.
And eventually, through this struggle, it realizes something crucial. Its own mind isn't just a passive camera recording the world out there.
It's doing something.
It's an active editor. It's organizing, shaping the raw sensory data into meaningful objects with associated qualities. The unity, the fact that, say, its whiteness and cubicalness belong together as salt, isn't purely out there. Mm-hmm. It's something your mind constructs as it tries to make sense of the stream of sensations.
So the focus starts turning inwards, towards the mind's own activity.
Precisely. That's a huge shift. Consciousness starts realizing its own role in shaping reality.
Okay, so if consciousness starts by realizing its own active role in perceiving the world, what happens when it turns that gaze inward? When it tries to understand itself? That, I imagine, is where things get really interesting. We move into self-consciousness and, of course, the part everyone talks about, the master-slave dialectic. How does Hegel actually unfold this incredibly famous and influential idea?
Right. This is probably the most famous part of the book. So at this stage, self-consciousness realizes a fundamental need. It needs recognition from another self-consciousness to truly know itself, to be confirmed as a self. This desire for recognition often leads initially to a life and death struggle for dominance. Someone has to be acknowledged.
A literal fight.
Or metaphorical. It can be literal, but it's also deeply symbolic of any struggle for status or power, where one seeks to subordinate the other. Initially, the one who fears death less, the master, seems to win, forcing the other, the slave, into submission and making them work.
Okay, so the master wins. Seems straightforward.
But here's the brilliant Hegelian paradox. The master becomes dependent on the slave's recognition. But that recognition is ultimately unsatisfying. Why?
Because it's coming from someone the master doesn't see as an equal. Someone they've subjugated.
Precisely. The master enjoys the fruits of the slave's labor, gets served, gets acknowledged. But it's hollow. It doesn't provide genuine self-worth because it's not reciprocal recognition between equals.
So the master's victory is actually a kind of dead end for achieving authentic selfhood.
Okay, but what about the slave? They lost the struggle.
Yes, but what's fascinating is the slave's transformation. Through labor, through actively shaping the world, imposing their will and consciousness onto nature, making things decide, the slave starts to see their own mind reflected back at them in their creations.
Ah, in the things they make. Exactly. In the pot they shape, the field they cultivate. This act of transforming the material world gives the slave a true sense of independent self-consciousness, a mastery over nature, even if not over the master. True selfhood, Hegel suggests here, emerges not from pure dominance over others, but from constructive work and, crucially, from having confronted the fear of death in the initial struggle.
Wow.
So this dynamic profoundly illustrates that authentic self-consciousness, real freedom, requires mutual recognition between equals. You can't be truly free if you're dominating someone, nor if you're merely submitting. It has to be reciprocal.
That has huge implications. Okay, so after this intense individual struggle for self-recognition, consciousness moves beyond just the I versus you. It starts to recognize itself as part of a larger social and historical reality. This is what Hegel calls spirit, right? Mm-hmm. And here he uses these powerful historical and literary examples like Sophocles' Antigone.
The classic illustration.
You have this tragic collision, don't you, between the divine law of the family, Antigone's sacred duty to bury her brother Polynices, and the human law of the state, King Creon's decree forbidding it because Polynices was a traitor. Both characters are absolutely convinced they are right.
Yes, and that's precisely Hegel's point. This case study beautifully illustrates how even seemingly harmonious ethical communities, like ancient Greece, contain these deep internal contradictions. When these contradictions are pushed, as they are in the play, they can lead to the community's dissolution. It shows that ancient Greek ethical life, while noble and immediate in its way, was ultimately unstable because it couldn't reconcile these two valid but conflicting claims, family versus state.
It couldn't find a higher synthesis.
Exactly. It couldn't see beyond the immediate opposition, leading inevitably to tragedy.
And this journey of spirit, this unfolding through history, leads us right through later periods, like the Enlightenment and the French Revolution. Hegel had strong views on that. He called it absolute freedom, initially.
He did. He saw the potential, the drive to remake society based on pure reason.
But then it tragically descended into the terror.
Precisely. Imagine the incredible fervor of that time, this belief that pure, abstract reason could just wipe the slate clean, ignore tradition, and build a perfectly rational society from scratch. But Hegel shows us the chilling irony, that very absolute freedom, because it was untempered by history, by concrete ethical life, by tradition, it spiraled into violence and repression, the terror.
It's a stark warning, isn't it, about the dangers of, well, maybe abstract idealism when it gets detached from the messy reality of human life and history.
A very powerful warning. Reason needs grounding.
Okay, and finally, after traversing all these stages, consciousness, self-consciousness, spirit in its various forms, all of this culminates in the final stage, the summit, which Hegel calls absolute knowing. Sounds grand.
It does sound grand, maybe even a bit intimidating. But absolute knowing isn't really about achieving some mystical state of omniscience, you know, suddenly knowing everything about the universe.
Okay, that's a relief. So what is it?
It's simpler and maybe profounder. It's simply consciousness fully understanding its own developmental journey. It's recognizing that the entire process we've just talked about, the whole phenomenology, has been its own self-realization unfolding. The subject consciousness and the object the world it experiences and knows are no longer seen as fundamentally separate or alien to each other. They are understood as dialectically united, two sides of the same coin.
Can you give an analogy, maybe?
Okay, think of it like this.
Yeah.
Imagine you've spent years learning to play a complex musical instrument, say the violin.
Right.
Absolute knowing isn't about suddenly being able to play every instrument perfectly or knowing every piece of music ever written. Instead, it's about reaching a point where you truly understand the process of learning itself, the structure of music, your own relationship to that instrument, how the sounds are produced, how they affect you. You become fluent in the language of its development. You realize that the music you create is both something out there, the sound waves, and yet also a direct expression of your deepest self, your practice, your understanding. Consciousness, in absolute knowing, understands that the world it perceives and shapes is, in a very profound sense, its own creation and manifestation, revealed through this long historical and personal journey.
It understands the system, the logic of its own becoming.
Exactly. The journey itself becomes the destination. Understood.
So let's step back. We've gone through this incredible, intricate journey. What does this all mean for us, you know, beyond the purely philosophical? What are the big takeaways from this massive work that can really shift our perspective today?
Well, stepping back for a moment, I think one of Hegel's most revolutionary insights, and one that's still maybe difficult to fully grasp, is the dialectical nature of truth and development. The idea that conflicts, contradictions, even failures, aren't just problems to be avoided or eliminated. They're the very engines of progress. They're necessary.
That really challenges how we usually think, doesn't it? We tend to see conflict as purely negative.
We do. We naturally shy away from tension. But Hegel suggests that genuine growth, real understanding, requires embracing and actively working through that conflict, that negativity. It's about seeing the no as a necessary step towards a richer, more comprehensive yes.
That's a crucial point. And it makes me think about how that idea of recognition and the struggle for authentic selfhood really stands out too. It's not just some abstract point about a master and slave long ago. It's deeply relevant to how our identities are shaped now through our relationships with others and how genuine self-worth seems to come only from mutual respect. You really can't find yourself in total isolation, can you?
Absolutely not. We are fundamentally social beings who need that mutual acknowledgement. And zooming out even further, another profound theme is the rationality of history and the overcoming of dualism. Hegel suggests, controversially perhaps, that history isn't just one random thing after another, There's a logic to it, an underlying rationality. It's the progressive development of consciousness toward greater freedom and self-knowledge, even through all the messiness and tragedy.
And the overcoming of dualism.
Right, the idea that the perceived split between our minds, the subject, and the external world. The object, this fundamental gap we often feel, is ultimately an illusion, or at least something that gets overcome. Reality, for Hegel, is ultimately a single integrated rational whole, where mind and world are inextricably linked, part of the same unfolding spirit, even if that link is often hidden from our immediate view.
Okay, this all sounds very high level, very philosophical, but let's bring it down to earth a bit. Mm. What are some practical ways, maybe, that you listening right now could apply some of these deep insights to your own life, starting today? Well, one area could be personal development and resilience. Think about it. Instead of viewing setbacks or internal conflicts or maybe periods of serious doubt as just failures, Hegel's perspective suggests they could be necessary stages in your development. That feeling of unhappy consciousness you might experience during, say, a career crisis or a relationship difficulty or just a major life change, maybe it's not just negative, maybe it's actually a profoundly productive moment.
Mm-hmm. Productive how?
Well, it could be pushing you toward a more integrated understanding, forcing you to confront limitations in your old way of thinking or being, driving you toward a new synthesis of who you are and what you truly value. It suggests it's not about avoiding the struggle, but learning from it, letting it transform you.
That's a powerful reframe. And thinking about leadership and interpersonal relationships, that master-slave dialectic offers a really stark warning, doesn't it? It basically says that purely hierarchical power structures where one person just dominates and the other submits are inherently unstable and ultimately unfulfilling for both parties.
Because there's no mutual recognition.
Exactly. So authentic leadership, or really any healthy relationship, be it at work, in friendships, in families, requires mutual recognition. Both parties need to acknowledge their interdependence, their contribution, their agency. True strength and effectiveness, Hegel implies, come from that shared, respected agency, not from just unilateral control or passive submission.
That really resonates. And this also seems to give us a potentially fantastic framework for conflict resolution and even social justice issues. Instead of just aiming for a compromise where maybe both sides give something up and are left partially dissatisfied, a kind of Hegelian approach might encourage us to look deeper for a higher synthesis, to ask, how might these two seemingly opposing viewpoints each contain a partial truth? And could those partial truths be integrated into a more comprehensive solution, something new that actually transcends the original conflict entirely? What stands out to you about that possibility? It seems optimistic, maybe.
It's definitely optimistic, but also demanding. It asks us to see the truth in the other side, even when it's difficult. But the potential payoff is a much more robust and lasting resolution.
As we wrap up this pretty intense deep dive, here's something to consider. Hegel's phenomenology is essentially the story of consciousness coming to know itself in all its diverse forms. He's essentially arguing that your individual journey of self-discovery, your personal struggles, your insights, your moments of confusion and clarity, these are not just isolated private experiences. In his view, they're actually part of this larger, rational, historical unfolding of what he calls spirit itself. Your microcosm reflects the macrocosm.
So perhaps the most powerful and maybe challenging lesson from all this is that embracing contradiction, patiently working through challenges, both the ones inside you and the ones out there in the world, isn't just a way to solve immediate problems. It's the very path, maybe the only path, to greater knowledge, deeper freedom, and a more profound understanding of who you truly are and what your place is in the grand scheme of things. It suggests that even in your moments of deepest uncertainty or struggle, you're participating in, contributing to, this grand unfolding narrative of consciousness finding itself. It gives struggle a meaning.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.